Welcome to Pilot Points, a podcast specifically designed for turbine pilot issues. Here's an experience I'm sure you've had. I was in Lowe's buying a can of spray foam. While I was waiting in the checkout line, I looked down to notice the label on the can. Net weight, 6 ounces. I'm thinking to myself, what on earth are they using for propellant? Rocket fuel? This thing has got to weigh over a pound. But my bigger concern turned to, would it be enough? Now, I know it's expansion foam and all, but it's still kind of surprising to see how much comes out of that little can. Which brings me to the topic for today, net versus gross. Net and gross is used in just about every industry, and we pilots use the term gross weight on a daily basis. But as it applies to performance, particularly the departure end of things, net and gross can be, well, downright confusing. There are two distinct areas where net and gross are used and pilots are expected to understand so they can correctly make necessary pre-takeoff calculations. The first area, required climb gradients like SIDS or obstacle departure procedures, do not actually use the terms net and gross, which probably adds to some of the confusion, but rest assured, there are net and gross elements. If you depart out of an airport with a SID that requires, let's say, 400 feet per nautical mile to 8,000 feet, that represents a performance and most likely a weight restriction. The first step is to correctly classify this as either a gross or net gradient. Remember this little gouge. The government wants you to get on this gradient using your gauges. Notice all the G's? G is for gross. If the government mandates it and you can fly it with your gauges, it's gross. Now, how do you do that? How do you assure you can meet a gross gradient? This is a bit of a dilemma since few, if any, charts in the AFM provide all-engine operating climb performance. Your only real proof is to translate your ground speed into the 400 feet per nautical mile to get a VSI reading. At 200 knots, a 400 foot per nautical mile climb equals 1,330 feet per minute, and at 250 knots, it's 1,667 feet per minute. This should not be much of a challenge for a turbojet with all engines operating. The real challenge is meeting the one engine in op obstacle restriction. With an engine out, you can always declare and deviate from a SID as necessary. But what about the obstacles and that pesky terrain? We'll get into the specifics of departure procedures in another podcast. But for now, just know that for every departure procedure, there are two elements, a net and gross gradient or slope. The number that is published by the government is always gross, as I stated earlier. Below the gross gradient line lies the net gradient. The net gradient signifies the actual limiting factor, be it terrain, ATC requirements, or noise abatement for the published procedure. In fact, the published gross procedure is simply the net gradient, to which the government adds a safety margin to compensate for pilot skills, reaction time, and so on. Up until a few years ago, that safety margin was 48 feet per nautical mile, regardless of how steep the required gradient was. 48 feet per nautical mile is also referred to as a 0.8% margin, since 48 divided by the 6,076 feet in a nautical mile is 0.008. Notice that the safety margin is not a fixed value like the safety margin of clearing an obstacle by 35 feet. The farther you get from the airport, the larger the distance between gross and net. Under the new rules, the safety margin increases from 48 feet per nautical mile as a minimum, upwards to 120 feet per nautical mile or more. In other words, it's not a fixed 0.8% anymore. We'll get into the details of that under the new podcast, New Terps, Up, Up, and Away. Bottom line, the net gradient represents the actual obstacles and can be used for obstacle clearance calculations. To calculate the net gradient, you must know under which terps the gradient was created. If you don't know, use the 0.8% safety margin as it'll be more restrictive. To sum up, the published all-engine operating departure climb requirement is also giving you, in a roundabout manner, the obstacles you must pre-flight plan to avoid with one engine in op. And I assure you, if you can meet the net gradient with one engine in op, you can surely meet the gross gradient with all engines operating. Which brings us to the second use of net and gross, and that is aircraft performance, designed and mandated by the aircraft manufacturer with some guidance from the feds. Just about all AFMs provide climb capability in terms of a net percent. The test pilots fly the aircraft during the certification process, and the actual flight path is recorded. Those values and that path refer to gross performance, what the aircraft can actually do within the restrictions of the certification process. Keep in mind that these gross values do not refer to a maximum effort ability either. The regulations limit the piloting to normal ability and skill. I recall comments made by guardsmen watching Air Force One depart Baghdad after President Bush made a surprise visit to the troops. They all said, "Wow, I didn't think a 747 could do that. It climbed out of the area like a rocket." The performance described in AFM must reference a takeoff profile that is achievable by every pilot. In order to accommodate reaction times, pilot skill, aging equipment, and so on, the test pilot or actual performance has been downsized or derated by a set amount. The amount it is derated is determined by the number of engines, 0.8% for a two-engine aircraft, 0.9% for three engines, and 1% for four or more engines. Another little tidbit, if the particular chart is assuming one engine in op, it's most likely the values will be net. If the chart is assuming all engine operating, such as landing climb gradients, the value is usually gross. So these net performance values, listed in the tables and charts of the AFM, particularly the four climb segment charts, actually describe a flight path that lies below the actual flight path flown by the test pilot, or stated differently when flown by the numbers. It's this net flight path that you must keep above obstacles, per FAR 135, 379, and 121.189. The net flight path is a planning tool. The aircraft is not actually flying along it. The path that you actually fly is the aircraft's gross performance flight path. The gross path is what you observe on your gauges. G for gauges equals G for gross, remember? So when you plan to pass over a 1,000-foot obstacle in a net path and clear it by 35 feet, during the actual flight, your radar altimeter will display 1,000 feet plus 35 feet plus a height equal to 0.8% of the distance from the runway to the obstacle. Of course, we're assuming you're departing in a twin-engine jet. Your pressure altimeter will report the gross height adjusted for field elevation and pressure. After planning a flight using the net takeoff flight path to keep you above obstacles and gradients, your aircraft's actual flight path may be above, right on, or below the required gradient, such as a SID. It all depends on the TERP's rules used in creating the departure and the number of engines on your aircraft. Again, we'll get into that another day. There is one last rule you should remember. Always compare net to net and gross to gross when attempting to apply AFM numbers to climb requirements. This is particularly important to remember when your AFM reports everything in gross. The safety margin built into departure procedures has nothing to do with the type of aircraft you are flying. It applies to all aircraft. If you apply net to gross, you are doubling up the safety margins. This is not desirable when attempting to determine the maximum weight possible. Now, your particular department may advocate adding to the safety margins built into the AFM, but at least you'll have a starting point based upon the minimum margins in the calculation. Well, there you go. Everything you ever want to know about net and gross. Thanks for listening to this session of Pilot Points. If you want to be notified of new subjects to the site, or wish to submit a suggestion for a new topic, click the appropriate link at the top of the page. I'm James Duvall. Thanks for listening.